It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
We'll punch you in the nose for 60 minutes with a relentless competitive attitude.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com as well as the mobile app. Thanks so much for tuning in. Multiple ways you can interact with us here on the program. You give us a ring, 201-939-4513. You could use hashtag GiantsChat on Twitter. As a reminder, you can find the archive of this show and our entire podcast network on the Giants mobile app, podcast platforms everywhere, and at Giants.com/podcast. Lance Meadow, Jeff Fiegels, Paul Dottino with you for the next 60 minutes. Obviously, we'll be recapping a disappointing performance for the Giants as they fell to the Cowboys 44-20. So the Giants now 1-4 on the season, 0-2 in the division. Dallas improving to 4-1, 3-0 at home. A lot to unravel because there were also a lot of injuries that piled up. Now, Joe Judge is not going to address the media until later today, so we won't have any updates from the Giants side of things, but it appears, at least according to multiple reports, and NFL Network's Ian Rappaport is saying that Saquon Barkley could miss potentially 2 to 4 weeks with what is being classified as a low ankle sprain. So that at least is the latest with respect to one of the most notable injuries. We'll get into that, guys, a little bit more moving forward. Let's start, though, of course, with the game. And the three of us chatted a little bit about this on the Giants Radio Network postgame show. But, Jeff, I want to rehash it here for members of our audience that may have not been tuning in. I think, regardless of the injuries, the missed opportunities before things started to pile up, when you get the Dallas Cowboys to turn the ball over twice and you don't do anything with that, you score no points, and they ultimately had two takeaways, they scored 10. You know, that was where the game was for the taking, where you said, hey, we can dictate the tone. We can put Dallas in an early hole, which they're not used to being in. And that missed opportunity, to me, allowed Dallas to regroup easily and then obviously run away with things.
Yeah, and also in the Cowboys, they turned their turnovers into points, you know.
Sure.
So, I mean, we talk about this all the time. We talk about, you know, the turnovers and what you do with them. And certainly it would have been a different ball game if those guys had done something with the turnovers. But, you know, the one, even if you don't score, I guess, you get some, you know, better field position, go on a longer drive. But, yeah, I mean, you got to be able to take those things, because we knew that the Giants had to keep up with the potency of that Cowboys offense. And, you know, it goes to show you they put up 44 points on the Giants yesterday, and there could have been a lot more if they didn't have that one turnover by Dak. So a lot of things point in that direction, but there were so many things that you could look at. I know we're going to talk about the injuries, and that's part of the game, but, man, yesterday was – that field was, even the Cowboys had some injuries too on that side. So I just think that, you know, collectively the Giants, they ran into a tough situation, and right away with Saquon going out. But, you know, the Giants, they have to turn those opportunities, Lance, like you said, into points. And if you can't get them against a team that scores a lot, you're in trouble.
You got an interception right off the bat. Lorenzo Carter made a great
play.
On a deflection. Came down with it, and then Graham Gano misses the field goal.
Yeah.
Then Dak and company get into the red zone. They're knocking on the door. Huge break for the Giants as he mishandled the snap. It wasn't anything that the Giants did, and then the Giants go 3-and-out. I mean, those are the two opportunities. And at that point, by the way, once the Giants went 3-and-out, the game is 3-0. The Cowboys, Paul, are only up by a field goal at that point. And then after the 3-and-out, they go 4 plays, 65 yards, and it's a 10-0 game. And remember, the Giants came back and tied this game at 10. But there were opportunities to maybe at least walk away with a field goal or a touchdown to potentially have the early lead.
Well, I agree with that part of it, Lance. And let's not kid ourselves. The last chance they really had while this game was knotted is the Bradbury interception, which it's 10-10. You got about 2 minutes left in the first half. And by the way, that whole 2-minute defensive drill is just not working out very well this year. I think that's an understatement. And, you know, not only does that pick, you know, if he holds on to it, prevent Dallas from going on another scoring drive to put you down by 7 going into the locker room, but not only that, I mean, it also thwarts an opportunity that you might have had, because if he holds on to that pick, maybe the Giants go and get points, and maybe they actually have a lead.
And they get the ball in the third quarter.
Now they're in position for the double dip. Yeah. So that drop pick right in his hands, right in his sternum. I mean, are you kidding me? Now, again, Dallas has a terrific offense. They rolled in the second half. They scored on five straight possessions. I'm not going to sit here and tell you the Giants win the game. I'm not going to do that. But I'm going to tell you that the game certainly takes on a different complexion. And be that as it may, it did not happen.
Yeah, well, what doesn't change, which is I think what you're alluding to, is the fact that the defense was healthy yesterday, okay? They didn't lose anyone of note during the course of the game. They've been without a few guys that they've lost in the previous few games, but that doesn't excuse the Cowboys from putting up 515 total yards. They went 8-for-14 on third down. They ran for over 200 yards. So they were extremely efficient, no matter how you look at it. And what was the Achilles heel, Jeff, in the Saints game? It was missed tackling. Taysom Hill bouncing off of guys, Alvin Kamara bouncing off of guys, and that was something we talked about after that game. You have to clean that up, especially when now you're dealing with not just Zeke and Tony Pollard, but you're also dealing with one of the best offensive lines in football that are effective in getting their running backs, Jeff, to the second level. So they're already doing a lot of the heavy lifting for their running backs, meaning you have to be in prime position to bring those guys down. And when you could get them in the backfield and you miss that, that's just asking for more and more trouble.
You're exactly right. And listening to Carl, who, you know, one of the best at the position that ever wore the Giants jersey, tackling, he said it's all personal. You know, if you're around the guy, you're there, you can make the tackle. Then it just becomes, you know, what you got inside of you and being able to make plays. We cannot sit here and tell anybody that this team does not miss Blake Martinez and Jabril Peppers. And that's not an excuse. I mean, the next guy's got to be able to step up. But those are two starters that really impact your running defense. And you can show how much that – you can just see how much those guys are being missed big time. And I think that, you know, hopefully – we know that Blake is not going to be back, but Jabril will be. Crowder and Coughlin and the guys in there. Reggie Ragland stepped in. He did a nice job, so, you know, a little bit here and there. But you tackling Lance and Paul is fundamentals. It's and by the way, if you are going to do your assignment and get to where you're supposed to be, you've already won half the prize. You're there. Now you just got to make the play. And I think that that's what's missing to the point where these guys are there. You saw so many times that they were at the point of attack and ready to make the play and arm tackles, right? Zeke Elliott is not a guy you're going to make a tackle using your arm. You're going to have to, you really have to wrap him up and get there. And I think that that's what's missing. And also, you know, there were some plays there that Rodarius Williams, a ball goes right through his hands for a touchdown. Julian Love on two separate plays was out of position. The one touchdown but that Bradbury gave up, that was a play that Julian Love was late getting over for help. Now, Bradbury should be able to handle that, but he didn't.
That was the C.D. Lamb touchdown, right, that you're referring
to, Jeff? That's correct.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, you look at Bradbury, last year, guys, three touchdowns all of last year. He's given up four touchdowns in five games. He's definitely, certainly one of the guys that has to play better and show up in big games. So lots of things to correct on that side of the football. But to your point, Lance, is that when you talk about injuries and stuff, yeah, everybody's got them. The Giants are not the only team that have guys that are out on IR for the whole season. It's they just have, you know, you got to have the depth and guys to step up to play. And when you talk about Blake Martinez, that's a big void. He is one of the leading tacklers in the National Football League, and he's now no longer on the field for you. And you got to fill that void somehow.
The other thing that I'm noticing, and I think that was apparent yesterday, is, and I know we're beyond the time in which Dalvin Tomlinson left this team. I get it. I understand they've had Austin Johnson, who had half a sack yesterday, and they have Danny Shelton. But I just feel like, Paul, last season, one of the reasons why the Giants were effective in stopping the run is they'd get that hit on the initial line of scrimmage to then allow Blake and company to clean it up. You're not getting a lot of those initial hits. Guys are getting to the second level before they're sometimes hit for the first time. That, to me, has been a trend so far.
Well, you know, I'd actually want to talk to the coaches a little bit more before I admitted to that. I think that the Martinez absence, to me, is the real problem here. Again, I don't want to minimize Tomlinson. He was a good player. He was a co-captain. Hated to see him go, no question about it. But I actually think that Austin Johnson, for the most part, has played okay. And so I don't see that. I know you've been harping on the Tomlinson thing for months. I don't see that as being a gaping problem here. I think the Martinez issue is a gaping problem. I think the Peppers thing, obviously, yesterday reared its ugly head. And I think on the whole, if you look at the, let's just say, because there's so many guys play a lot of snaps in the sub package, let's just say for argument's sake that there are 14 regulars on defense. You're 11 starters, and let's just say three subs who play an awful lot of snaps. Okay, let's just say 14 guys. How many of those 14 guys are playing to their capabilities?
Not many.
Two, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Well, it's hard to highlight anybody at this point, okay, let's be honest.
That's the problem. To me, that's the problem. I'm not even ever going to mention Dalvin Tomlinson ever again for the rest of the season, because that's not the problem. It's the fact that your 14 basic guys on defense who are playing the most snaps are not playing up to their capabilities. That's the problem.
Well, and that goes back to execution, which I don't think anybody would disagree. Clearly, this group is not executing at the same level. However, what is also interesting is, even though the defense guys, if you recall, made strides, it's important to note they struggled early last season. I feel like that's a segment of the season we tend to just brush to the side. The defense got progressively better and better, but they truly weren't clicking, Jeff, until you got to the midway point where it seemed everybody got comfortable. We were talking about, if we go back to last season, how many times, Jeff, were we talking about right before the end of the half, the opposition marches down the field, scores a touchdown? We were doing it with the Dallas game last year, week five. We did it in the Pittsburgh game, right?
Yeah.
Constantly we were talking about. So I feel like we're revisiting the early struggles last season, and everybody sort of dismissed that because as the season went along, that unit started to play a little bit better.
And most of those guys are back, Lance. That's
yeah,
the
of
problem.
Course. Sure.
Well, I think, you know, as much as we want to downplay the Tomlinson deal, I feel like, and listen, I think that last year, Paul, you know, he's a guy that teams had to, you know, they had to look out for. Which freed up Leonard Williams a little bit. I mean, now I don't see, and this is where I've kind of a little disagree with you, to the point where Austin Johnson and Shelton, you know, those guys collectively together might be equal to one, but I still feel like, where's Leonard Williams? Because now everybody can kind of concentrate on him a little bit, you know, and that's why where's his sacks coming from this year? So I think there is a little bit of that, but I think collectively, like you said, you take, and I think it's a great point with 14 guys, because that's usually what your defense is this year, your sub packages, nickel, dime, all that kind of stuff. You got guys that play a lot of snaps, even though they're not starters. But all of those guys looking themselves in the mirror, you know that on, and by the way, today, from experience on Mondays coming in after losses like this one, and actually, you know, you won the game last week. Defensively, you got ran over too. And tackling was atrocious. Now it's 2 weeks in a row. It's not fun being in that meeting room today.
Well,
and I'll tell you, I just know that we all have been around the Giant organization for a while. We know that the facility takes on the it takes on what the team is doing, and it's very somber over there. I'm sure I'm not there. I know that, Paul, I think you were there today, but it's got to change sooner or later. You know, it's just, you guys got to look in the mirror and get better.
Paul, were you going to add something?
Well, I was only going to say, you know, I kind of compare it in a way to what happened most of the season with the Yankees in baseball. We looked at their lineup and we said, well, let's see. Torres is underachieving. LeMahieu's underachieving. Voit's underachieving. I mean, I know there were some injuries involved, but outside of Stanton and Judge, how many guys on the Yankees played the full season and actually hit to the back of their baseball card? Hardly anybody did.
Well, you could throw Gerrit Cole in there, too.
Yeah. I mean, he was good.
In terms of playing up to expectations.
He was good, but he was supposed to be better.
Yeah.
And certainly down the stretch after the COVID and the hamstring, he was not the Cole that's on the Topps baseball card. And so, you know, this is kind of the way it is in sports across the board. When you have guys who you're counting on to give you that standard line of production, and they don't come near it, and then you have a bunch of guys on top of a bunch of guys who aren't doing it, this is the soup that you're in.
Now, speaking of personnel, before we start to open it up to phone calls, I want to get to the injuries, because obviously that was a significant storyline as well. I mentioned Saquon Barkley off the top. They lost him very early in the game. He unfortunately stepped on Cowboys defensive back Jordan Lewis's foot. he had to be carted back to the locker room. Right now, according to reports, low ankle sprain. Ian Rapoport says possibly 2 to 4 weeks. Then they lose Daniel Jones, who was trying to run in. He left the game due to a concussion. He didn't return for the second half. And then Kenny Golladay had mentioned after the game that he hyperextended his knee. He tried to play through it. It was too much. So he's getting an MRI today. Daniel Jones is going to have to go through concussion protocol. So, you know, when we start to speculate, is it possible any of these guys return for the Rams game? At least let's start with Daniel Jones, Jeff. He's going to have to go through NFL concussion protocols. They can't navigate that any differently than any other player. So I think we'll know a little bit more Wednesday/Thursday in terms of how he's progressed through those different steps.
Yeah, and they're all different. Just like guys heal differently. Some are faster, some are slower. Concussions are, there's different grades to them. So I know from experience that, you know, sometimes I had a couple, more than two in the league. And one of them was about 48 hours later, I started to have symptoms, you know. So, and that's what all these protocols are for, and these kind of like little stages that you got to go through. I'm not familiar with what they are nowadays because they didn't have them when I was playing. But I'm sure that, you know, it's probably pretty unrealistic when you look at the way he was walking off that field that he's going to play this week, which leads me to, you got Mike Glennon, who came in and did a serviceable job yesterday. He certainly found the guy that he wanted to throw the ball to, and we haven't even touched about Kadarius Toney today. But I feel like, you know, if he's going to be the guy for this week, you know, you got to have a backup quarterback going into the Rams game.
Well, there's Lewerke.
Yep, so they're going to have to bring him up, and at least he's familiar with the system and he's got some experience there. But, I just think that it's a tough situation with concussions because everybody's different. You know, you look at some players in the past that have been concussed. They've missed extended periods.
Well, look at Sterling Shepard, right?
Yeah.
He missed some time.
I mean, yep. So this is something to be very, very concerned about, both for him as a person that he's going to be okay. But, you know, as a team, you could be losing your starting quarterback for success. I mean, could two weeks, 3 weeks, a month? Who knows?
Well, I think you bring up a great point, Jeff, about that. You could be better today or tomorrow, and then Wednesday all of a sudden you could have symptoms again.
Yes.
So it's really an up-and-down process. Every player is going to vary, and that's why you just can't assume that a guy is going to return. For example, Teddy Bridgewater, he suffered a concussion. He was able to start yesterday, but Teddy's not Daniel Jones, and Daniel Jones is not Teddy. So you can't go based on one player, well, then the other player is going to follow the same exact script. Now, you brought up Kadarius Toney. Paul, the other thing is, in addition to his very impressive performance, as he seemed to wreak havoc across that Dallas defense, 10 catches, 189 yards, he did get ejected from this game. And he threw a punch at DeMonte Casey, and it was absolutely right to throw him out of the game. He has since apologized on social media. There have been some reports. I know Joe Judge spoke to the media after the game, said he's going to leave it to the league. We were talking about this on the post-game show. I referenced there was an incident with a Bears wide receiver who was suspended 2 games. The initial reports look like he will avoid suspension, which certainly is positive for the Giants' perspective so that he'll hopefully be available for the Rams game. But it really is inexcusable at that point in the game, especially when you're having such a productive contest, to let your emotions get the better of you. And also, no good is ever going to come of something like
that. No, that's for sure. I mean, he used his hand against a guy's helmet, which obviously doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And, you know, he's a rookie. He's a young kid. He's got a lot of growing up to do, a lot of maturing to do. If he was a 6 or 7 year veteran, it would be even more egregious. As a rookie, you know rookies are sometimes going to do dumb, stupid things. Okay, that's just the nature of what being a rookie is sometimes. And so I was glad to see his posting on social media today about, you know, his sorrow and apologizing and taking responsibility for the incident. Hopefully, he'll be able to move forward and clean that up and you know, grow from it and learn from it. And again, mature is the key word here, because I think we saw the 180-plus yards that he caught, which set a Giants single-game record for rookie receivers. We saw he can be incredibly difficult to guard.
Well, listen, I think he took a step in a little bit of a maturity by coming out on Twitter and apologizing. Okay, that's a baby step, okay? And he's going to learn from this, hopefully. I'm quoting him now. This is, I'm looking at his Twitter page now. Want to take the time out to apologize, okay, which is good, to the entire organization, owners, my teammates, and the entire Big Blue. Your emotions just can't get the best of you. Your emotions just can get the best of you sometime, which we all know that. No excuses, just actions. Thank you all. Listen, that's a start, okay? And I think that if he has some remorse in there, which I believe he does, this is a good thing. But it's never a good thing to get thrown out of a football game. And especially the game that he had, because you could see how this offense is kind of exciting when you look about number 89, what he can do when you all of a sudden get everybody healthy. What a blow, though, just having Saquon out. I mean, can you imagine that game with Saquon yesterday and Kadarius Toney? Man, that offense probably would have done a little bit more. I could guarantee you that.
Lance Meadow, Jeff Eagles, Paul DeTito with you here on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, recapping the Giants 44-20 loss to the Cowboys in week number 5. Let's open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. And we first check in with Alex in Tampa joining us. What's happening, Alex?
Hello, fellas.
How we doing? What do you got for us?
Hey, man, I'm listening to you guys and kind of do agree with a lot of the stuff that you guys are saying as far as the defense and all the yards that they got. But I want you guys to correct me if I'm wrong. Momentum changing, and I believe like our defense, every time we go to Dallas, the officiating is sucked because. Like, okay, on that, I think they called that on Bradbury when they showed that, I think he was on CeeDee Lamb, and when they showed the replay, it was perfectly covered, man. It was perfectly, that was no pass interference. And all CeeDee Lamb was, you know, raised up his hand, like trying to get the flag, and then the officiating threw the flag. I don't know if you guys remember that, you know.
Sure.
And,
yeah, he was called for pass interference.
Yeah, but you guys, I mean, that was clearly defense, man. That was no pass interference.
Okay. I'm gonna have to raise my hand here. I object. I thought that should have been a penalty, but I also thought the interference when Toney got mugged in the end zone, even though his foot had slipped out, I think that was just as clearly pass interference because, again, if you look at that play, what you will see is that the defensive back's hand was actually on Tony's jersey at the time the foot slipped out, which is where I disagree with Mike Pereira on television when he said, well, because the foot slipped, you could call that either way. Well, no. The defensive back's hands were already on Tony at the time when his foot slipped. So that's pass interference in the end zone.
And you can see when he made the cut, he even pushed him even more so he can fall.
Yeah.
He pushed him.
I'll give you the second one, but I'm not going to give you the first one because Bradbury had contact as well.
And he had contact before the pass arrived, too.
So yes. What about the helmet-to-helmet to Daniel Jones? What about that one?
No. Whoa. I'm sorry.
No,
I can't agree with you.
He hit him in the head, man.
It was an accident. It was an accident. That's incidental contact. You have to understand something. Jones, listen. I'm going to be real nice about this. Jones was trying to get to the pylon, so he lowered his shoulder to try to get to the pylon. When your shoulder lowers, your head lowers too. The guy's coming in to make the tackle. He did not lower his head. He did not spear him. He did not target him. I don't have a problem with the Cowboys' play on that. It's unfortunate their helmets clicked, but I cannot throw a flag on that play. I can't.
You're telling me that he couldn't go for the legs, like right there where most of the players go for the legs?
No, they're actually telling most of the players to not go for the legs. They're telling him to go in the direction of the waist to the knee in that area.
He's trying to get his head across the body, and that's how he was trying to make the tackle. And to Paul's point, he lowered his head, which when his head is going across the runner's body and he lowers his head, it's incidental contact where the helmet's hit.
Well, plus you could argue, Jeff, that Daniel Jones essentially initiated the contact.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, because he lowered his helmet.
He initiated the contact.
Sure, absolutely.
Guys, can I give you one observation about that play that has nothing to do with a flag? How about the fact that Daniel Jones's helmet and the Dallas Cowboys defensive back's helmet hit? He obviously was concussed, and he didn't fumble the ball. Daniel Jones held on to that ball and fought for an extra yard and went down at the one-yard line without putting the ball on the ground. How about that? Can we at least say something positive about Daniel Jones for being able to not fumble that ball?
No, I'm not saying nothing negative. Daniel Jones is playing awesome. I'm not saying anything about that. I'm saying that every time New York Giants go to the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, we always get right with the officiating. And that's
Alex, in fairness, Alex, if you take a step back, you're going to tell me that you can't make that same argument for every single Giants game at every single location and every single NFL game? What you're saying? I mean, listen, we're going to let you go on that note. I get irritated when people call up and they start pinpointing specific locations when you could obviously, guys, you could bring up every game. Remember the Giants Bucks game, the last play, right, where they were trying to go for the two-point conversion and the flag went down and they picked up the flag? That game was at MetLife Stadium. I mean, to pinpoint one location I think is a bit silly when you can really put any game under the magnifying glass and say officiating could be borderline. It's a subjective business. It always will be. There's no difference.
It's a bang, too. It happens so quickly, and we get to see. We had the luxury of seeing everything slow down, but at the point when it's happening, it's so fast that it's hard to call these plays. Sometimes it's just like it's a judgment call for the officials.
Absolutely. Let's head back to the phone lines. Ray is in South Carolina joining us. What's happening, Ray?
Good. How you doing, guys?
All right. What do you got for us?
Long-time listener, man. Been a Giants fan for a long time. First time calling in. I've always listened to you guys.
Welcome.
Well, thanks for tuning in.
Well, thank you. You make a lot of great points. And I'm always, and I just had to call today because it's a little disappointing. As I look at the team playing, it's for some reason the defense seemed to took a step backwards this year and the offense took a step forward. And I don't understand it. Is why can't they seem to stop the run? If they can stop the run, it would open up our passing game. If they can, I just don't understand what's going on with them guys. Is it the coaching and the guys are not taking it to the field, or are they not listening, or are they just afraid of Dallas?
Well, here's an interesting thought, and just follow this logic for a second. We've been talking ever since the season started that the Giants have been victimized by a bunch of missed tackles. They have not been fundamentally sound in bringing guys to the ground. Now, as Jeff was saying before, that means in a lot of cases they're in the right spots. And he was echoing Carl Banks' thoughts about that's effort. That's on those players to make sure they bring the ball carrier to the turf. So I'm inclined to believe it's not so much a scheme thing as much as it is guys just aren't finishing the plays like they're supposed to. Isn't that more on them?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I would say the feeling too, you know what I mean? Because we're being a laughing stock of the league right now, especially with my family. I got a bunch of them that's Dallas fans.
And you're in a tough situation there.
Oh yes, what are you talking about?
Twice a year,
man. My phone was burning up yesterday.
Well, I mean, look at it this way, right? We talk all the time about how the defense can't get off the field. Well, if you have a bunch of missed tackles and dropped interceptions, tackles and interceptions will get your defense off the field, but they're doing the two things that will prevent your defense from getting off the field.
Well, they're doing the two things that extend drives to the opposition, basically.
Bingo!
Yeah.
And they
The other thing
they were 8 of 14 on third down yesterday.
Correct. Now, a lot of those third downs, though, in fairness, Jeff, were manageable third downs
because they were
doing damage on first and second down.
And we talked about that in our pregame, how successful they have been on first and second downs. And, man, were they. Holy smokes. They just ran the ball on first and second downs consistently to get you in those third and shorts. That's the key.
That's a big principle within their offense. The other thing that I wanted to add is just an example of fundamentals. If you guys remember, there was a play where Ezekiel Elliott was running up the right sideline. Tate Crowder was just going to try to push him out of play, if you recall.
Oh, my God.
He didn't get him out of play, so then Zeke just continued to go up the right sideline. Mm-hmm. So there's an example of it's not necessarily you weren't in the right spot or the right place. It's a matter of fundamentally you weren't thinking about tackling him. You were just thinking about pushing him out of play.
Yeah,
and that's fundamentals.
In that instance right there, I mean, the last thing you want to do is push him out of. I mean, you gotta make. There's a chance that he could fumble the football. You gotta put a lick on the guy. He's got just a push. Listen, I'm the guy that's supposed to push guys out of bounds. Okay, not a starting inside linebacker.
Can you catch him, Jeff? Can you catch
him? Well, I probably wouldn't have caught him. But listen, if I had the angle on him, I would have pushed him out of bounds. Yes. But my point to you, you know what it is. If you are a starting linebacker in this league and you've got a running back that's going for the pylon, you need to take a shot at him and try to have him fumble the football or at least not score, because you never know what can happen. The next play, look what happened on the shotgun snap when Dallas drove down into the short red zone and they fumble the football. That could be the next play. It's effort. It's effort, effort, effort.
You know what doesn't make sense about that, Jeff? Because I agree with you, but here's why it's so perplexing. They drew a line in the sand in the fourth quarter of the game the previous week against New Orleans, when clearly the defense decided enough is enough, the buck stops here. They got very physical, very intense, very decisive. Remember they made that huge play with Ojulari and Lorenzo Carter on Taysom Hill as he tried to, it was a
when
huge
he went to the right.
play.
Yep. Yep.
It's a huge play with 9 minutes to go. That changed the entire game because the defense said enough is enough. And from that point forward, the Saints had no room to breathe. So where was that gumption yesterday? That's what I don't understand.
Well, I also think the frustration got the better of them, Paul, to answer your question. I think as the game progressed, you had Tony throwing punches. You had guys drawing back and forth with one another. And sometimes when you're frustrated and you're more concerned about making a statement and putting a guy on the floor, you sometimes sacrifice fundamentals. I think that was a contributing factor to why, to your point, it got cleaned up late in the New Orleans game and it wasn't there to be found against Dallas.
Well, even in the first half, I'm looking at Dallas with two 10-play drives and an 8-play drive. Drives of 49, 41, 65, and 75. You know, I get it. That's a really good, highly skilled, talented Cowboys offense. I totally understand that. But if you are any remnants of the top 10 defense that you were last year, even with a guy or two missing, if you're any semblance of that, you got to dig your heels into the sand early in that ball game, and you can't even let Dallas do as much as they did in the first half of that game. Remember, Dallas, if it weren't for two turnovers, because of the way that they moved the ball effectively, could have easily had more points.
Sure.
So I don't want to just say that the Giants' defense was disheartened in the second half. In my opinion, I don't think they played well enough to win from the very get-go.
I don't disagree with you at all. I'm referring to that Crowder play, though, that I was bringing up. That happened with about 7.5 minutes to go in the fourth.
Right.
So that specific play, well beyond what we're talking about in terms of early in the game.
That's a little bit of a different piece of pie right there.
Correct. I mean, the game at that point is out of hand, and Tony and everybody else and the emotions and this and that. And Ray, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in as we move along here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Before we get to some more phone calls, a few reminders. The 2021 season is now underway, but there's still time to secure your season tickets. You can root on your Giants here at MetLife Stadium. Speak with a Giants ticket representative now. Become a season ticket member. You can call 888-NYG-1925. Also, taking all the action of New York Giants football from your very own private suite. Giants suites are a great way to entertain the family and friends while rooting on your Giants at MetLife Stadium. You can speak with a Giants suite rep by calling also 888-NYG-1925. And on an unrelated note, the Delta variant is spreading quickly in all areas of New York State. People who are not fully vaccinated are at greater risk from COVID-19. Protect yourself. Get vaccinated. Visit ny.gov/get vaccinated or talk to your healthcare provider. Let's move forward and head back to the phone lines. Greg is in Atlanta, and he joins us. What's happening, Greg?
Hey, how you guys doing today, man?
Hi. All right, Greg. What's on your mind?
All right. Just calling, man. Just frustration. I think two things I'm seeing that I just want to speak about. Well, one is One is the play from yesterday that got Daniel Jones hurt. I was, just as a fan, and you guys, I know y'all may want to correct me, but as a fan, I was disgusted with the play. We on the goal line. Why not try to go mano a mano? You insert Elijah Penny into the game. Go, you got two downs, third down and fourth down to try to get that touchdown. And I just think we should have went forward instead of running a naked bootleg with our franchise quarterback and put him out there on the island and I guess they was assuming that if he was out there that he would be smart enough. Daniel Jones really just hurt my feelings because it's what Paul says all the time. You got to take what the defense give you. And when he ran that bootleg out there and realized that he wasn't going to score, instead of trying to go head first and score, he just should have slid. I just wish he would have slid because he's a great quarterback. He's progressing into a good quarterback. But those type of plays is hurting us as a franchise. Like, he understand the value that he brings to our team and just slide and live for another play. And I think defensively, I just think that when Saquon and Daniel Jones and the injuries started to accumulate, I think the defense just lost hope out of frustration. You know, we just need that type of coach that can motivate. And I'm not saying Joe Judge don't do this. I'm not sure if he does or not. But and when we face adversity, we need somebody to challenge our guys to step up instead of taking that route where we're frustrated, we're swinging on players. It's time to come closer together when you lose people and try to assert your dominance more. And I just think that's what happened to the defense. They were frustrated by the key injuries that we had. And if we didn't have them injuries, we started out smoking. I think we had a real good chance to beat Dallas until we got them injuries. And I just take your comments off the air. But I just want to express my frustration. I wish Daniel Jones slide. And I just hope the defense learned to play regardless what they're facing.
All right, Greg.
You got to continue to play. Thank you.
Well, appreciate the phone call. A few things I just want to react to what he said. Number one, as far as, you know, needing a voice to rally the troops, they were down 11 points to the Saints in the fourth quarter, and they came back from that. So I don't buy that it was because they were missing a voice on the sideline that needed to get everybody motivated.
Remember, though,
buy.
Lance, one thing. Just remember, it was the halftime speech by Barkley that really sparked that firecracker, and they seemed to really build off of it because Barkley was very vocal then the whole second half on the sideline. He seemed to be that voice that was leading the way. And, of course, yesterday he goes out early with that injury and his voice was no longer heard.
No, and I get that. But I think there's plenty of other guys that were very
and
much
I get
involved
that. And
in the
And I
game.
Agree. I agree.
And you can't depend on that every week.
I'm not saying
correct.
You should,
yeah,
but it
you,
is
Jeff.
Important
yeah.
to make the notation that Barkley was the voice in New Orleans. So it's not exactly the same, but somebody else could have certainly been the vocal leader at that point.
Sure, and I think there was also, the other thing I wanted to mention is I think there's a distinct difference, and guys, if you disagree with me, you disagree, that's fine. There's a distinct difference between lack of execution and lack of effort. I'm
sure.
not necessarily
sure.
seeing the lack of effort, I'm seeing the lack of execution. So as far as the caller's point saying, well, I wish the defense would be more inspired to play after all the injuries, I don't think they weren't inspired to play. They just weren't preaching the fundamentals and showcasing that consistently.
Lance, you make a great point. Okay, the lack of execution and the lack of effort. I'm gonna go back to that play that Daniel Jones got hurt on. And Paul and I were talking a little bit before the show started today about that play in particular. And he pointed out to me something that I didn't see because I didn't go back and look at it. But the fact of the matter is, you talk about execution. If that play is executed correctly, then Daniel Jones scores.
He could crawl into the end zone,
Jeff. It was not executed. Therefore, the effort was on Daniel Jones to get into the end zone because the execution broke down. The two guys that tackled him should have been blocked, and they were not. And I said to Paul before we came on the air, I was saying to him, you know, all that Daniel Jones had to do was look up. Rudolph was wide open in the end zone. And he says, yeah, you know why, Jeff? Because he missed his block, and that's who the guy that hit him. So, you know, that play was a design play to run the way he did it. It was just not executed right. So the effort was there, but the execution was not.
And you know the shame of it, to the caller's point, Jones is thinking there, he's trying to be a leader, he's trying to spark the team.
Well, he's done it before, Paul. He's
right.
running, he's gone,
he's
gone
on
those
conversions.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, each
exactly.
of the last 2 weeks. Yeah.
And in his mind, he's thinking this is another one of those two-point conversion scenarios that I'm going to rally the troops. So he's not going to give himself up on the one-yard line. He's going to try to muscle his way in. I know exactly why he did what he did.
Sure.
But to the caller's point, would it have been a safer call to just go down? No
yeah.
question.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Well, and I think another part of his mindset is it's third and goal at the one. I don't think he wants to lose yardage because maybe you then give yourself a chance to go for it on fourth down. I think a lot of those things are in his head at that point. You know, you're 1 yard. You don't want to, if you slide and then you wind up losing a yard or two, then maybe they decide to take the 3 points. Maybe they don't go for it. So I think there was a lot of things that unraveled, unfortunately, not in favor of the Giants, but I'm with you 100%. The first thing I said was he knocked over Grady Jarrett 2 weeks ago. You think Daniel Jones is now going to all of a sudden say, I handled Grady Jarrett, but now I can't handle a safety right. and a linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys? Come on.
He's combined those two guys weighed as much as Grady Jarrett.
Did you, not to get off topic, but I don't know if you saw Grady Jarrett spoke to the media after the game. And he said that, you know, like he was going to have to lift some extra weights after the game, after Daniel Jones knocked him over. He was joking, of course. But, you know, he felt that. I mean, how many times do you see a quarterback knock over Grady Jarrett at the line of scrimmage?
It's admirable. What Jones tried to do on that play was very
admirable.
And
that was the effort.
And the intensity that we're talking about. He was trying to show that for his team. So I excuse what may have not have been a smart decision because it was a good football decision.
And that's why it's important to classify the differences in terms of effort versus execution. Let's head back to the phone lines. Nick is in New Jersey joining us now. What's happening, Nick?
Hi, Nick.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing all right. What's on your mind?
Yeah, it was a rough day yesterday. I spent the game watching with a bunch of Cowboys fans, so you can say I didn't sleep. But
understandable.
Yeah, just a couple things. I think the biggest thing for me, I think for as lack of effort as you see the defense, I feel like that their biggest problem is that they don't have as much as like a pass rush as they did last year. Like, yeah, they're getting to the quarterback, but it's not as much. I don't see a strong enough pass rush. And to be honest, I feel like they had, a decent first half, except for the fact that they let them go up a touchdown before halftime. But I honestly truly believe that it's the fact that, you know, you lose all these guys on offense. You're not putting up points, so you're leaving the defense out there basically the whole game, and it just kind of like puts them in a rut. Whereas in like, yeah, it's not the strongest defense, and Dallas has obviously a powerhouse offense. I just feel like they kind of shot themselves in the foot because they just kind of were giving up, given the fact that they were just always out there on the field.
Well, and, believe it or not, Nick, I don't mean to cut you off. Time of possession really actually wasn't that lopsided in this game. No. It was 32-12 for Dallas and 27-48 for the Giants. You know, to your point, you would think, maybe Dallas had the ball for like 10 more minutes than the Giants. They didn't. The gap was much closer than most people, I think, would think.
Well, Glennon orchestrated two very nice drives in the second half.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess I disagree with your point about the reason why the defense wasn't playing well is because they were just worn down. And also maybe because of better field position for the Cowboys. There was a drive, and we were talking about this on the postgame show yesterday on the radio network, because we were talking about, guys, if you recall, the call in the end zone on fourth and two, the no call, no flag. So Dallas takes over on the two. They go 98 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not putting your defense, Nick, in a bad position on that standpoint. You're telling them, hey, make sure you guys get them off the field. They got to go 98 yards to score a touchdown.
See, there's a place where you want to draw a line in the sand. They're taking over on their own 2 yard line. That's where somebody on defense needs to start foaming at the mouth and saying, look, I'm taking this game into my hands. I'm making a play. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big play in the game because, that if they score there, it's a one-possession game. One-score game, excuse me. And so that was a big play. And I mean, how many times you go over it, and we can argue the point, but whether he fell down and that instigated that what should have been a penalty, his hands were on it. His hands were on his back the whole time. That's a penalty. And I don't know how that guy how he missed it. He was right there. Makes me mad.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an easy call, but, it could go either way, I guess. But I think another thing for me is that I think they have the offense as, like, such great weapons. I mean, obviously, they're plagued with injuries as of recent, but I think they have such great weapons. But to me, I think he does a great job, but sometimes he comes up short. And I feel like Jason Garrett has a little bit of a conservative play calling style to where I feel like, going back to even to the game against the football team, they're throwing all over them, and then on that last drive they decide to play conservative, get the field goal. Next thing you know, they lose the game. So I just I'm not like I'm not mad at the play calling, but I'm just not 100% confident in Garrett's play calling style.
How did you like the Wildcat play with Kadarius Toney?
I thought that was, you know, it was definitely
he got 7 yards on it. That was pretty creative.
I thought it was creative, but that's probably the most creative I've seen so far. I mean, I feel like some of the plays are predictable. Like we're talking second and longs and the constant mid draws up the middle, and it's just I feel like it's becoming a little bit easy to read, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, Nick. Well, we'll let you go on that note. Appreciate the phone call. What were you going to say, Jeff? I'm sorry.
We never know the play. We never know if it was changed. I know that there isn't a lot of plays that are changed at the line of scrimmage from Daniel Jones. I know that he has the ability to do that, but we don't know what play was sent in and if it was changed or what. So it's kind of hard to sometimes talk about play calling when we don't know the whole story.
Well, and I think Glennon was taking some shots down the field. It wasn't as if, they were throwing 4-yard passes and then hoping for all the yak. There were some chances. I mean, the interception obviously came back to bite Glennon when Trayvon Diggs got it, and they were trying to get Toney out in open space. There was another play, if you guys recall, where Toney threw to Booker, who was wide open and would have had blockers ahead of him, and he dropped the ball.
Yes, I know.
So, I mean, once again, I know it's the boring response, but we keep going back towards execution, don't we? I mean, opportunities are there, and the players are not coming through and executing.
Yeah.
And everybody's just trying to find ways outside of execution when really it always goes back to execution.
Well, and if you want a prime example of execution and how fundamentally sound an offense should be, go look at the overtime period against the Saints. That was an epic drive for the Giants. You talk about execution. I mean, that was like you couldn't have got it any better than that. Okay, and that is the difference between winning and losing sometimes in the National Football League. It's a set of plays each week that kind of put you over the edge from losing or winning, and it all comes down to who executes and makes those plays. And listen, the Giants got into some extraordinary situations yesterday with injuries, and we can sit here and talk about it all we want about depth and the guys could step up. And I know that we argued this point, or at least you guys did last night, about backups or backups for a reason and this and that. There's a reason that 11 starters are on the field, because they are the best players on the team at those positions. And when one of them goes down, most likely the talent behind him just isn't good enough. That's why they're not playing. So there is going to be a little bit less of execution when it comes down to it. But the starters, there's no excuse for not executing and doing what you're supposed to do.
Sure.
That's just all about mental preparation and mental errors.
100%. And I think, listen, there's no doubt about it that the amount of talent they lost, okay, was overwhelming. But I think there also, Jeff, is something to be said about if you're going to say that guys are keeping the game close when it's 17-10 and you've already lost a lot of your playmakers, but then when the game gets lopsided, now it's because you lost all those guys, that to me doesn't add up.
No,
that's, I guess, where I'm coming from.
It doesn't. And by the way, you gotta pat the guys on the back that if they stay into it the whole game and they compete all the way through and you lose the game, we can have a moral victory there, but when you have a team like the Dallas Cowboys, who we can now say that the Dallas Cowboys are probably one of the best teams in the National Football League. I mean, come on. Their defense is not really good, but their defense is better than it was last year because they were horrible last year. But their offense is incredible. And so, if you can hang with those guys till the end and lose, then yeah, you need to do a good job. But the problem is that eventually talent wins out.
Well, it's a war of attrition, Jeff, is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
It's not just the fact that the talent at that time on the field was clearly tipped to Dallas's favor, but because of the injuries which exacerbated the situation, the Giants were just not going to be able to hang much longer than they did.
Right, right. Yep.
You wanted to add something?
No, I said yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep, correct.
Let's move along here. 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow, Jeff Eagles, Paul Dottino with you here. Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Stas is in Washington joining us. What's happening?
Hey, what's up, fellas? So I want to let you guys know I've been listening to the show since like 2013, back when it was like a 30-minute show. I think it was like 3 times a week. Never miss it. Called in hundreds of times probably. Absolutely love this show. I love it to give the fans a platform. What I've never talked to you guys about, and it's normally because I don't like bringing it up, because I don't like the questions that come with it, is something about me, which is I spent half of my adult life as a member of TACP, which is a Special Forces Unit for the United States Air Force.
Thank you for your service. That's very impressive.
Love to hear some stories.
Thank you. You're welcome. So I know a lot about discipline and controlling yourself when your adrenaline is pumping beyond control and having controlled chaos and controlled violence. So when I see a football player, which is just a game, right, throw a punch, it bothers me, right? It bothers me because I'm like, you have to have some more self-control. But that being said, there's another element here that no one's really addressing. And it's something that I don't even normally like to talk about. But in every sport, I don't care what sport it is, one of the main duties of any officiating is to control the temperature of a game. It's to stop it from getting out of hand. Even in the boxing ring, if there's too many headbutts and you let it go along, next you know someone's ear gets bitten off, right? You allow a temperature to rise. There were too many egregious calls that were not called yesterday. So at what point? Someone's going to snap eventually. You know, Kadarius Toney was pushed down. There wasn't a flag after the play. He was being held up after the whistle. Deontay Booker's helmet was ripped off in the end zone. Like, at some point, you can't expect somebody, and I'm coming out of this call in defense of Kadarius Toney, because I kept watching the game, and I was watching with my best friend, who's a Dallas Cowboys fan, and even both him and I were saying, somebody on the Giants are about to pop off. Because there are too many non-calls here that should be blatant calls. And I think the Giants as an organization needs to say, hey, what's going on? You know, I'm not talking about ticky-tacky, oh, you know, illegal man downfield, you know, stuff like that. I'm talking about calls that will raise the temperature of the game to a point where now someone's punching.
Stas, right? I'm glad back? You brought this up. And the reason I am, because I certainly wasn't going to bring it up for fear that it would be considered some type of homerism. I agree with you that there are too many times in the National Football League where the officials are late to get in to end the play. And I think that's what you're getting to here. The whistle blows, forward progress has been stopped. Okay, get in there and end it. But instead, what you will then have is another 2, 3, 4 seconds of guys who are piling up, pushing and shoving each other, and that only leads to prickly feelings, which then leads from prickly feelings into something worse. So I absolutely agree with you.
Now, let's put it this way, Paul. I wonder what's going to happen the next Dallas Cowboys game, because right now, on Cox's Instagram story, he has a picture of him hitting Daniel Jones, and he captioned it, "I hand out concussions, LOL."
I saw it.
Like, at what point do you handle yourself with some class and some dignity? Like, okay, you want your team to win, and you want—I don't like—I hate the taunting call. Like when people are dancing in the end zone and stuff, I hate the taunting call. I do, right? Because have some fun. But there's a fine line, and I don't think that the referees are doing what they have to do to protect players from themselves, and that is one of their mandates, if they like it or not. And eventually, like when Leonard Williams ripped off Pollard's helmet. Like, that was dumb. But you mean to tell me he didn't see Deontay Booker's helmet get ripped the last offensive series before and saw the no-call? These guys, a locker room is a lot like a military unit. You fight for each other when you feel someone, and you can't.
Well, that's part of why Toney got involved, because Evan Engram got pushed, and Toney was there to defend his teammate.
Stas, I think I want to make it very clear to everybody out there, you're not specifically, although you're citing some instances in the Giants game yesterday because it's fresh in your mind, I'd like to believe that you're agreeing with me. This is a league-wide issue, and it happens in a lot of games that we see every weekend, where I think there's just a little too much shoving going on after plays. And as long as we acknowledge it in a generic sense, I think it's a very valid point.
And guys, like I said, love the show. I'll take the rest off the air. I just couldn't stay quiet about it. I don't like pulling the officiating card because, like you said, people are like, oh, it's because, you know, you didn't get the favorable calls.
Right.
I'm not talking about that. You know, this is in general, and it's just – this league, Carl Banks said something crazy on his podcast that when I first heard it, I didn't think too much about it. but then he said it twice on his podcast. And it's not to be accusatory, but he said something that made sense. He said, it's very funny how this year's officiating has been so erratic. And it's also one of the first years that the league has embraced the online gambling. And you have to start watching things like that carefully. Because even if you're not doing anything wrong, you can cause people to ask the question. And that can damage the shield.
Well, I mean, that may be going a little too far, and appreciate the phone call. I
think, this is Carl Banks' words.
Yeah, well, I'm saying I think that may be going a little too far. So, I mean, I didn't hear Carl say that, so I'm taking your word for it. But I would still say I think the whole point is officiating fluctuates every season in the National Football League, okay? And I've watched enough games. I cover the entire league. It goes up and down. You can watch one game, it's called this way, because, you know, one of the things when the Seahawks, guys, if you remember, they had the Legion of Boom, and Pete Carroll's even talked about this. They would wait to see how the officials would call games at the line of scrimmage to see what they could get away with in terms of jamming guys at the line of scrimmage. That's no different than what other teams would do if they want to dictate the tone of a game. So I completely disagree that this year is now on an island compared to what we saw 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. It's all based on feel. Every team takes the temperature to see what the officials are going to let you get away with and what they're not going to let you get away with.
And by the way, before every game, and I'm not sure that Joe Judge does it. I'm just going on what I told you. You know, I'm going to tell you with Tom Coughlin on our Saturday night meetings. Saturday night meetings before the game, he let us know exactly who the crew was.
And their tendencies, right?
And the tendencies. This is the number one crew in the National Football League for pass interference. This is the least amount. This crew throws the least amount of flags for offsides or whatever it was. So you have the tendencies going into those games, to your point. And so, it changes. Every crew is different and every situation is different. And I know that a lot of people come to the conclusion that referees are trying to fix games because of gambling and stuff. Do you think they all have little microphones or what in their whatever it is in their ears that they're getting somebody to tell them throw the flag because it's going to affect the play we need to do? It's not that way. It fluctuates, like you said, Lance. It's a great point. Every game is different. Every situation is different.
You know, Jeff, I will say this. I know that Coach Coughlin used to do that, and I think most coaches around the league do
they
that
have
now.
To, right?
It's part of
yeah.
the analytics thing.
Sure.
I'm sure it's part of the analytics book. Yeah. It's one of the chapters. Check out the penalties that this officiating crew calls.
Mm-hmm.
But what Stas was talking about is not necessarily penalties. We're not talking about flags that should have or should have not been thrown. We're talking about the tenor of the game, the climate of the game. There's a run up the middle for 3 yards. Okay, forward progress is stopped. And then all of a sudden, 2, 3, 4 guys continue pushing on the pile for another couple of yards after forward progress is stopped, and the officials are not quick to get in there and stop it. And now all of a sudden you got more guys pushing, more guys falling on top of each other, and tempers start getting out of hand.
Well, the extracurricular. But in fairness, Paul, okay?
I mean, it has nothing to do with a penalty flag.
Let's take your example.
When the play's over, get in there and break it up.
Okay, but let's assume you're officiating the game, okay? You have Leonard Williams and Zach Martin getting into it. Good luck, Paul, trying to break that up. Paul, okay? How successful do you really think you're going to be in terms of separating those two giants?
You're not.
You tell me.
I grant you, it's not an easy job.
Okay, well, that's my point.
You got to get that whistle blown loudly, and you got to be quick, and you got to try to get in there as soon as you can. And I think that there are too many times, and this has been going on for a few years now. This is not something isolated to yesterday's games. I have been talking about this very topic, but not on this show until Stas brought it up. I've been talking about this now for years. I have noticed this. There are many instances where this will happen and the officials are letting a little too much contact go on after the whistle. I'd like to see that cleaned up because there are games where it won't happen at all, which means it is doable and it is possible if the officials want to take it seriously enough.
Let's try to squeeze in one more caller here. We got Kevin in Philly. What's happening, Kevin?
Hey, guys. Great hearing your dialogue today. I think it's been thought-provoking on many levels, but I don't want to go into the past. You guys are a bit too young, but I'm having this horrible 1970s deja vu where year after year, losing performance and the rationale behind the why and what for, you know, range from we don't have the right players, we don't have the right schemes, we don't have the right momentum, blah, blah, blah. And I'm really wondering at this point if we're saying, which I think you guys seem to be, that the coaching schemes, specifically on the defensive side of the ball, are sound, then it really starts to get at, do you have the right people, you know, do you have the right players? And if you don't have the right players at the right level to compete with the upper echelon after what Gettleman's had now, this is fourth year, I believe, you know, at what point do you just sort of fish and cut bait? I know it's you know, here again, people will say, oh, there's injuries. Oh, it's early in the season. But, you know, the bottom line is we're just not a very good football team. And at what point do you guys collectively say, you know, you start looking and saying, all right, you know, maybe you need to just come up with a different model at the top to replenish this organization. Thank you.
All right, sure. Kevin. Appreciate Thank the you. Phone call. When it comes to decisions like that, I think based on the Giants' track record, first of all, this is not a franchise that makes decisions for the sake of making decisions. And more often than not, and Jeff, listen, you played for this organization. Most decisions when it comes to evaluating from a coaching and a management standpoint don't really take place until after a season. This is not something that they'll get overreacted to simply because of a slow start after five games.
Well, you don't have enough time. I mean, you got 7 days to go to the next game. So it's like, you know, if you're going to start making a bunch of changes and stuff, you have to think about what's going to, you know, is it a positive? Hopefully. But I mean, you can't make rational. You're right. You have to wait until the offseason. And that's what's so important about the general manager and the head coach and the owner is this getting together and having a plan and seeing, being on the same page and coming up with guys to play. Listen, this team is so much better than the team, you know, a few years ago, and they've been built through the draft. You look at Dave Gettleman, some of the success he's had in some of his draft picks. Yeah, has there been bad ones? Of course there is. Every GM has those. It's not a perfect science. It's a very difficult thing to do when you go through the draft to try to get these players to play. But the onus is on the players, guys. I mean, this team has competed. They have competed every week. They even competed to a point where, you know, yesterday they competed with the injuries they had until it just got away from them. But, you know, this just comes down to guys having to play better. And that's something that comes from inside each one of them and from the leaders on that team. Because you're right, Lance, you cannot just all of a sudden go out and find a middle linebacker like Blake Martinez and plug and play. This isn't a video game. You know, you just can't do that.
Or it's not fantasy football where you just go
that's
to the waiver wire.
Wait a minute. I have Harry Carson on speed dial in my cell phone.
Very good. Yeah,
listen, if he could get another player or two, I'm sure they'd welcome him.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he can definitely suit up. He can't play anymore, but you can get him on the sideline. If that's going to help. It's not.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's just, and I'm telling you, these meetings on Monday are not fun when you're losing, and it's just, it's, you know, at some point in time, you as an individual have to look yourself in the mirror. And I remember we've talked about this so many times. Look yourself in the mirror and say, what do I got to do to get better? Is it, do I need to on my days off on Tuesday, spend all day in the facility watching film and doing things? What is it? I don't know what it is, but you're going to have to find it. And that's where you always like to have leaders on your team that these guys follow and, you know, by example. And so I remember, you know, I'm obviously going to go to one of the best leaders ever to play for the Giants, is that's Eli. I mean, Eli was a guy that people just looked up to because of his preparation and what he did off the field and the times that he didn't have to be at the facility he was. And some of the things that, like, listen, I played a long time in this league because I did things differently, okay? And part of it was because, number one, I was always afraid to lose my job, gentlemen. That, to me, was the biggest fear. For me to lose my job. Sometimes I don't think that's a fear to people anymore. And to me, it was always a fear. So what did I do? I had to be better than the next guy and always trying to think of something to improve. And it was not only just doing things at the facility. I would bore you to death with how much stuff I did away from that facility to make me successful. And sometimes guys just don't think they have to do that to be successful. And I'm just saying that. I'm not saying that everybody does or doesn't do this, but I'm just giving you my own
Your own perspective.
Yeah, my own perspective. And by the way, how I did it. And I'm not the only one. You look at a lot of the guys that are successful, they'll tell you the same thing, Lance and Paul. They'll tell you that I did things off the field that other people didn't. And that's just something that comes from inside, wanting to get better at what you do. Because, by the way, they are going to try to replace you constantly. And I was always afraid of that. Just didn't want anybody to take my job.
And that fear could be a driving force.
Yeah,
you
fear was
to.
A big force.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, I was married young, had kids young, and I had a family. And I didn't want to lose my income by losing my job, because it was a heck of an income by doing what I was doing for a living. And I loved it. And I was like, sometimes I was like, really? They're going to pay me this kind of money to go punt footballs? Okay, I'm in. You know, so.
Sure. Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, we'll leave it at that. And certainly appreciate your perspective, Jeff. That's going to wrap up Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll be back up and running again on Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. A reminder, today's episode of Big Blue Kickoff Live, part of the Giants platforms everywhere, and at giants.com/podcast. For Jeff Eagles and Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Minow. Stay locked to giants.com for all the latest. Enjoy the rest of your Monday, and we'll speak to you on Tuesday. Have a good one.